In this, the penultimate episode of 77 Degrees South, the Inspiring Explorers team make a run for Hut Point deep in the Ross Sea region of Antarctica. There, we hope to return an item of precious cargo carried all the way over rough and rolling seas from Ōtautahi, Christchurch, a well-thumbed copy of The Count of Monte Cristo found outside Discovery Hut at Hut Point and now being returned to the ice. The artifact adds to the story of what life was like for heroic era explorers who found life-saving shelter in this hut. Discovery Hut was built in 1902 for the first British Antarctic expedition. For the 47 men who were part of Captain Robert Falcon Scott's Discovery Expedition, this hut was used to undertake valuable scientific research, as a theatre for entertainment, and as a base for some of the first forays to explore Antarctica. Later, the hut was used by every subsequent heroic era expedition based on Ross Island as shelter and as an important staging post for their expeditions heading southwards. They would use a blubber stove for heat and cooking, covering the walls of the small hut with soot. At 10 o'clock, the evening after visiting Cape Royds, the Heritage Adventurer passengers were told that we'd be making a break for Hut Point. Inside our cabins, Louise, Lucy and Daniel were considering the task ahead of them.
So, earlier tonight we were told that we're making the most of a weather window slash the channel that the icebreaker has carved through to McMurdo Station is available, so we're basically possibly able to go to Discovery Hut between, 10 p.m. and maybe 5 a.m.?
Well, so what they said was, so the Polar Star, who have been actually cutting the kind of the channel through the ice, they go on break between 10 p.m. and the morning. So while they're on break, while the Polar Star is sleeping, we can creep in through their channel.
Strike while the iron's hot.
That's exactly right. And maybe make it up to Disco or Discovery Hut. So this is actually, it's very exciting because Christian explained that you virtually never get to Discovery Hut on the January. They do two tours because that's when the Ross Sea is open, but there's a January and a February, and apparently the Discovery Hut is basically exclusively a February one because the ice is always in, so they never get there. So we're really lucky that there's even a chance that we'll get there.
And that was kind of news to us, but how awesome that we might be able to make it work.
It sounds like tonight is our only opportunity as well to get in, because they'll be working again through the daytime to remove the ice.
At all the other huts, we've kind of only had 15-minute slots, 15 or 20-minute slots, and they never feel like enough. Like, by the time you're in there, like, your eyes adjust, you see things, you know, it's like the time is just gone, and you kind of stumble back out, you know, with your eyes kind of adjusting to the light again, and confused and you know, in complete awe and a little bit frazzled. But I think this time we're really going to have to work, and there's been no indication that we're going to get more than that 15-minute slot. So we're going to have to be pretty efficient. We've already got a few possible locations marked up in the work plan here. So we're going to have a bit of a chat about those. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, when we walk into that hut, like, what feels best is what we're going to go with. So definitely nothing's going to be decided right now, but, you know, it's worth having a bit of a chat about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when we're in there too, Al will be with us, and he knows these huts intimately, and I think we'll have a real sense of intuition about where is the best place for this. So his input will be really, really appreciated in that moment.
Yeah.
As we tried to imagine where to put the book in the hut, we're reminded by Alfestia that having a feeling for the spirit of the place is crucial to conserving the huts and their artifacts with meaning. Something he learned through his 18 years as the Antarctic Heritage Trust's conservation manager.
When we did the conservation work, that typically would take about 1,000, 1,500 artifacts back to Scott Base to be conserved over winter. And a learning that we took away is that it was really important to take the winter conservators to the huts so they could actually experience the emotion, the sight, the overall feeling. So that was actually, what's the word I'm thinking of? It was when they're doing the conservation work, is that they had an understanding.
Al explained to us how the Trust's team has set up the huts to maintain their history, even with few visitors, apart from lucky ones like us.
The objective is for the huts not to feel like a museum. is to have the feeling that, you know, the hut's been left and you've just gone inside and you're experienced, you know, the building, as people say, as the men have just left. And so I think that experience is very important. You probably noticed that last night. I'm really keen for the guides to say not much at all in the hut, because no, I treated it as a cathedral. I prefer people not to speak, and if they do, in hushed voices. I prefer people to go in and not to hop behind their camera screen straight away, but to actually absorb the place.
For Al, visiting the huts now still carries weight, even after decades of working on their restoration.
I first went to Antarctica in 1987, and I was a Sparky at Scott Base. And one of my attractions for actually applying for the job was the history. So I, in my younger days, I read a lot of the history. And so it was very important to me to get to the historic huts, and I had the opportunity. And I can remember going in, and I was moved, and I can remember getting a tear in my eye. And strangely enough, as last night, I still was moved, and I had tears coming out of my eyes also. So it's been a workplace for me, but actually having the hut conserved and put back into its state is still very emotional for me.
For our team, returning the artifact was a similarly monumental moment.
We've had a super brilliant day, and we've also been now lucky enough to visit three of the historic huts. My cup feels pretty full. I think it would be amazing to be able to return this object back to the hut. It's kind of what we've all been working towards and what we've partially come here for. But in a way, we've done such an amazing outreach to the passengers already. So many people are really engaged with it. People are really engaged with the history and now with AHT. So part of me feels like 90% of this mission is already kind of complete, and yeah, it would be disappointing, but I don't think it would totally break my heart or be the end of the world if it did have to come back with us to Christchurch, because I know that it will get back there one day.
Absolutely. I think I just echo that as well. Like, we could have come here and seen zero huts. We've seen three so far, and it's been absolutely amazing. They said we're the first into Cape Royds this in January, which is the ice magically moved for us. Cape Adair was very similar. Like, I honestly didn't expect that we'd get to Cape Adair. I think now seeing how engaged the passengers were, you know, I'm absolutely the same. Like, I think it's been amazing.
Of course, like, all of us have had a fantastic time. And, you know, I think we've had so many incredible experiences already that it would just be, it would be enough. But also, you know, to say that it wouldn't be a disappointment not to make it to Discovery Hut after we've built it up so much, of course, would be understating it, you know. So I think all of us really would love to get to that hut. And, you know, if we don't make it, like, no worries, we'll bring the artifact back, and we'll go on as many of these heritage trips as we need to before, you know, we return that. At this point in time, like, we're so close, like, you know, we're definitely going to be sailing past it. It would be such a shame to kind of sail past it, to look at it, to see it, and you know, and maybe not get the chance to return it.
I have a very distinct memory of being on the ice this afternoon and having this really clear feeling that, like, that moment marked, like, enough, like, in the trip. Like, I remember standing there on the ice and just thinking that if there was nothing more to come after that point, then I would feel sort of satiated. You know, regardless of whether we make it in or not, this moment is the crescendo of the trip, right? We've been so lucky so far. We've had incredible weather. We've had incredible conditions. We've made it to all three of the huts we've tried to land at. We have been, like, so remarkably fortunate. And of course, to get here and to land and to get the book back to where it belongs would be, yeah, pretty incredible.
Meanwhile, on the bridge of the ship, explorers Maya and Nawai were holding their breath as the ship attempted to push through a thin channel made in the pack ice around Hut Point.
Currently, we are at the front of the ship. We're right where the captain would see everything. The ice is really thick. Like, it's really, really thick, really hard to get through. Unfortunately, our boat is not designed to break ice, or in other words, be an icebreaker. So at the moment, currently, we are turning our ship around. It is 10:01 on Wednesday, the 22nd of January, and we have just been told that we potentially have the opportunity to go to Discovery Hut, which is really monumental for our Inspiring Explorers program and AHT, since we have been working so hard with the conservation process of a historical artifact, the Count of Monte Cristo, that we plan on going back. So right now, we are all standing with a bit of anxiety. We don't know for sure what is happening. Emotions are all up in the air, a lot of excitement, a lot of fear, a lot of nervousness feeling. So, you know, everybody's really excited to get this to this hut, and, you know, all the passengers, even the ones that don't have anything to do with the Count of Monte Cristo and returning this artifact, you know, they are really excited as well. And so, but I am a bit anxious about the ice. It is really thick. But I'm hopeful that our team and, you know, the captain and XYZ will be able to get us through. So,
yeah,
excited.
And just in the bridge now, we've kind of stayed out because we don't want to annoy anyone, but yeah. Captain's focused.
Yeah,
it's tense. The air in there, the energy is tense.
Yeah.
While the captain pushed the ship to its limits, we found that the ice was still too thick.
We were just trying these channels that polar star we're creating, but you can see that the ice has already moved around and has already closed in, and there is no way to take the ship to Hut Point at Montreal Station tonight.
We all let out the breath that we'd been holding. We weren't able to make it to Hut Point. We went up to the ship's deck to catch a view of the ice we'd been pushing through, and together stood in awe at the beauty of Antarctica. It was a disappointment, but in the beauty of Antarctica, it's hard to view anything as missing out. We spent the next day amongst penguin colonies at Cape Bird, resting and immersing ourselves in our last few days in Antarctica. Here's Maya at Cape Bird with the penguins.
I'm standing on the gravel at Cape Bird. It's on Ross Island around the coast. There's a little Adelie running straight towards me. I just have to move out of the way. They're very cute when they're walking Adelies. They've got little pink feet and their arms stretched back and their head forward, and they always look like they're on a mission. They've got a place to be. We saw some emperors earlier in the trip. We're very lucky to see emperors, and they're very slow, contemplative, purposeful. But Adelies feel more like me when I'm in the mode. They've got a place to be. There's penguins porpoising in and out of the water as well, and right down near the water. And there's icebergs, little tiny flows of ice all around here. All around. And in the distance, a quite gigantic, quite remarkable iceberg. It looks like it's split in two not long ago, right down the middle, and now two pieces are sitting alongside each other, leaning away, the light blue reflecting up off the water. It's colder today, it's grey. It's not like the heat that we had at Cape Adare that really quite overwhelmed me. Now I can look at these Adelies in a different light. I can be appreciative for them, and I'm very quite fond of them in the way they waddle and the way they walk. These small little curious penguins.
Despite not reaching Discovery Hut, we were content with the most awe-inspiring experience that many of us could have ever imagined. But at dinner that night, the intercom went again. Against all odds, we were going to give the ice channel another shot, hoping that strong winds had cleared a way for the ship to squeeze through.
It's been a day. We're back out on the deck again. The wind is blowing. We're moving fast through open water. My hands are freezing on the microphone because I forgot gloves. I'm here with Nawai again.
It is Thursday, the 23rd of January. Currently, it is 10:05. We're currently standing on the deck. It is sunny, so it's good vibes right now. But we were just having dinner around 8 o'clock, and we came on the intercom, and everyone went silent because we heard Christian's voice. And the words that really blew up were, "We are gonna try again." And
Yeah, the absolute cheers from everyone, which means, you know, we're really confident that our captain, Yasik, will be able to get us to the hut, and we're really, really excited. Still a bit nervous, you know, anything could change. Yesterday we had a Polar Star, which is a US operation boat that broke a lot of the ice. They call the icebreakers. But unfortunately, the sea ice moves really fast with the wind, and so that sea ice came back together and the channel was then covered and we could not get through. There was no access. Now, for today, the wind has done its job, hopefully. And what we are hoping is that the wind has opened up that channel again with all that broken ice, which will allow us to get to the hut. So currently, we are just waiting to hear any updates to see if we will be landing on the hut. And we're really hoping that we do land at Discovery Hut. Tomorrow morning, we've got to wake up bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, really early in the morning to, you know, do our landing and hopefully be the first group there so we get a bit more time. Yeah, this is really important to us, and currently I'm feeling really a lot of butterflies, a lot of wairua at the moment. Spirit, I can feel, you know, Shackleton and his story. So yeah, really, really excited, really nervous, anxious. My saying is stay hopeful and stay positive. So that's really cool. And we're going inside to pack our bags for tomorrow morning.
Yeah, early Yay! Morning. Let's hope for the best.
You know what? One word, friend. One word. Chihu.
Sleep we did not. No sooner than as we finished preparing our kit for the morning, we found the ice completely blown out of Hut Point. We were landing right now. It was a short and bitterly cold ride to the beach at Hut Point Peninsula, clutching the pelican case holding the Count of Monte Cristo close. Once we landed, the young conservation professionals in our team were the first to step inside the hut and finally decide where the book would rest.
Let's go, guys. We've made it to Hut Point. It's really cold. It's really intense. These film crews around. Our friends, our team have just gone in with the book and they're going to put it in. And we're all feeling a bit emotional. You know, like, really proud that our team has made it this far. And, you know, we didn't think that we would get here. And our vibes were really negative. And, you know, it just feels like really extraordinary to get here. And, you know, finally put this historical artifact back, you know, to the place it belongs. And just watching Louise take the first steps in there and watching Daniel and Lucy follow her and Daniel carrying the case and how seriously they take it and how much care they have. I'm really, really proud of them. And I know they're in there now and I know they're putting it down and that's where it's going to rest. I'm just watching Kitiona and Jake go up to the cross on the hill, but I want to wait for the rest of our team. And when we're together, maybe we can do that.
We did it. Like, there was a day that there was an announcement that we weren't be able to make it. Everyone felt down, but we just never gave up. And now we made it. Like, we entered as like at least four huts in this one expedition. It's just crazy.
Yeah, this is our last hut.
That's the worst feeling, just saying goodbye to the island, to the hut.
Our team was successful in our task to return the Count of Monte Cristo to Discovery Hut, placing it beside the sleeping platform, its blubber-stained pages suddenly making sense among the sooty surroundings in the hut. The artifact finally looked like it belonged, adding a new layer to the understanding of this important cultural heritage site. Back on the ship, I debriefed with Maya and Kitiona about what it was like at Hut Point.
Standing outside, first of all, it was cold. Man, it was cold. Which was great, because it was probably the first time since getting here that I've felt cold. And it wasn't, you know, uncomfortably cold, but there was definitely this sense of the place that we were within. Like, you were very aware that it was very, very cold. I guess the first impression of the hut probably starts from before you even see the hut, because you see McMurdo Station, and it is huge, and it is It's obviously been really expanded over time, so it's very kind of modular. And it's funny because you can stand at one side with McMurdo to your back, the station to your back, and look at the hut and look at the cross on the hill behind it, and it looks very untouched. And then you can stand on the hill looking back at the hut, and it's like dwarfed by McMurdo station behind it.
The wind just like immediately dropped away when you stood in there as well. Like suddenly there was no more howling cold wind. It was remarkably well built in that way.
Yeah, and that's something Al said as well. Like it was always a real reprieve when they were working there. To be able to step inside, but you get in there and it doesn't feel, and maybe it's because it's not so filled with artifacts, but it doesn't feel as, and it wasn't lived in, but it doesn't, well, it was lived in, but not in the same way the other huts were. It was a base, really, and they often lived on the ships when they were sort of docked outside there, and you kind of feel that, like it doesn't have that same sort of warmth or lived-in feeling that Cape Royds had, and it doesn't have that same sort of weight of history that Cape Evans had. But I think that it also spoke a lot to, you know, something which Al had talked to us about, which is how those huts only have importance or meaning because of the context and the environment which they're within. And I think that the environment having changed so much around that hut has also changed some of the, I guess, the significance, not the value, but the significance or how we interact with and experience the hut itself. And for me, it really reaffirmed just how important it is that these, you know, historical icons remain in this place and how much value that adds to the experience of interacting with them.
But Kitiona, let's chat about some smells.
Oh, you're...
What could you smell when you stepped inside?
I smelled like the seal blubber. Then on the left, there's like dog treats, so I didn't smell that, but I can smell like rust and all that, so I couldn't smell the dog treats. The onions.
Where did you see the book?
Oh, so as you step in, you take a left into like a little door, and then you see like a bed. It's not really a bed, I think. And there's like a book, and it's placed there on a table, I think.
The Discovery Expedition, that very first one with Scott, we all know how Scott was really, you know, science was really important to him. The phrase, the birthplace of science in Antarctica, is often used in connection with Scott's expeditions and Discovery in particular. So it's kind of cool that where Discovery was, where, you know, the first, you know, some of the first big science in Antarctica took place around that hut. It's used, for example, storehouses, even though they lived on the ship. You know, now there's this massive station with all of this really cool science going on in there just behind it. It's really just expanded and grown out. And that way, that's a good way to look at it. And it's like, I think he would have loved to see how much science is being done in Antarctica now.
In the next and final episode of this series, our explorers leave the Antarctic region behind and reflect on the impact of the Inspiring Explorers program to them.
This episode was written and produced by Maya Ingo, with technical production and music by Callum Turner and narration by Jake Bailey. Thanks to the donors to the Trust's Inspiring Explorers Fund, expedition partner Heritage Expeditions, and supporter Cheshire Architects.